perhaps maybe you can just tell your story or what you care to share of your story to the audience and to obviously why it relates to, unfortunately, what has been dominating the headlines in the National Hockey League with Kyle Beach over the course of the last week.
Of course. Yeah, and thank you. I really appreciate, you know, after I did the presentation with you wonderful people earlier in the week, as you know, I am never short of words when it comes to safe sport, and I'm just so honored and humbled that I'm in a position now, based on my firsthand experience as well as my experience in safe sport, to be able to educate and bring awareness to this critical issue. So I think I'll speak from a perspective that everybody would understand, and I'll speak first about myself as a victim of sexual abuse within the sport system. I have had many years of, to be honest, therapy and work to be able to come to a place in my own healing to speak on this subject. And I'll be honest, first and foremost, that helping is what helps me heal. So before I begin, I just want to mention that there's many, many people listening that are also victims of sexual abuse. The current statistics in Canada are 1 in 3 females and 1 in 6 males. So I know every time I speak on this subject, I'm speaking directly to a victim. So first, I want to share that, you know, I do what I do and I'm public with what happened to me because I know it helps me and it will help others. And in no way, shape, or form is there any pressure on anyone to come out and tell their story publicly as I have. There's people like myself who, you know, thrive in this environment of change and help from a public voice perspective. So we're here to do the work on all of your behalf. I think what's really important about my story is the true nature of sexual abuse in sport. There's many forms of maltreatment, everyone. There's psychological abuse, physical abuse, harassment, neglect. So in no way am I undermining the importance of those forms of abuse. And when it comes to sexual abuse, I think the most important thing that everyone can be aware of is very complex and very complicated. In a sports world where you are an athlete and you have a person of authority over top of you, it is very natural for that athlete to want to be favored by that person of authority. I'll pause right there and say person of authority because I use that word instead of coach, because this can happen to anyone by anyone who is in a position above them in the system. And from my perspective, I was sexually abused in the late 90s by a coach. He was sexually abusing multiple young girls on the national ski team at the same time. And here's the thing. It was so complicated and complex and such a mental game of coercion and manipulation that none of us even knew the other girls were being abused. So he managed to isolate us and sexually abuse us numerous times without any of us knowing of the other victims. So that just points to the complicated nature of what can happen. Referencing specific to Kyle Beach, what I really empathize with his story is the reality of the complex nature of what it feels like to be an athlete in the presence of a coach. And I've read the investigation through and through. And what he shared in there, where his side is that that coach said to him, you know, I basically control your future, good or bad, in the NHL. I can speak from my experience. That is exactly how I felt in my circumstances. So in our case, we were, I did come forward and report the abuse to the organization, much like Kyle did. And my interpretation of this, because I do not pretend to know all the facts or what really happened, is my interpretation is what happened to me was very similar to what happened to him. So my abuse was very clearly swept under the rug and covered up by the organization at that time. And it wasn't for 15 years later that our abuser was caught coaching again young girls, and he was actually caught by a victim of his from my time. So that just shows the power of victims and the power, even more importantly, of witnesses and bystanders to be able to come forward and do what the system, and here I will say more specifically, the organization responsible and has a fiduciary duty over that athlete, what that organization failed to do. So I want to pause here and let you know one critical thing, whether you're a parent, an athlete, a coach, anyone in the sports world, you, if you are not the victim of abuse, you will see it so much more clearly. When you are stuck in that cycle of abuse, when you're being manipulated, coerced, or physically abused, you don't see things the way others will. And that's why it is critical for everyone to take a role and to stand up. What I say is, if you see it, say it. Be strong, come forward, and talk about what you are seeing, and be confident to come forward and protect yourself and to protect others. So in my case, we went through an arduous 2.5-year criminal trial. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison, and we received a criminal conviction, mostly because he had kept physical evidence of the abuse over all those years. So a criminal conviction in a sexual abuse case is very, very rare. So we achieved that, and we were very proud of ourselves. And then what happened was we clearly recognized about a year after that the sports system in Canada was doing nothing to change. Who is the sports system in Canada? In my case, in the amateur sports world, that is all the national sporting organizations governed by Sport Canada, which directly receives funding from the federal government and then passes that on to the national sports organizations. What was occurring was, and I'm always very frank, as you guys know from earlier in the week, it was like, okay, we put the bad guy away, now let's go back to business as usual. And that is the problem. Way too many times we focus on what actually has occurred. Once what has occurred is gone, we all go back to our regular day jobs and our regular lives, and we don't push to change and make critical changes. So that's exactly what me and four fellow victims did. We came forward with our names and our voices, and we petitioned the federal government to make critical changes to the amateur sports world. So that's why when this has now occurred at the NHL level, I have all level of respect and gratitude that the world listens once it happens in professional sport. It's a much more, you know, media placements. You know, you've got coaches who are losing jobs in other organizations. People start to listen. So I've been in this work for over 4 years. What changes occurred at the amateur level of sport currently are exactly what need to happen in the professional world. So when we speak about changing the system, I'll be very specific in what that looks like. There needs to be very clear training and education for all members of the organizations. There needs to be very clear policies and codes of conduct in place. There needs to be independent, safe sport agencies, of which I am a partner in one. What those agencies do is they intake complaints and manage cases. So what that means is that Kyle would have come to someone like myself and my business partner or many other people out here that do independent safe sport services. He would never have even had to go to the organization to report his abuse. The organization is inherently biased, whether good or bad. They should not be a part of this process. So at that point, what we do as independent safe sport service agencies is we trigger an independent investigation. When the threshold is met and the body of evidence is strong enough that an investigation needs to take place. So again, to make it relative to the Kyle Beach situation, what we all know of is the investigation that was done independently, and what was not done independently was the reporting of the complaint itself. Last but not least, once all of that has happened, there needs to be clear sanctioning that takes place. This is a gap right now in the system. That sanctioning needs to take place outside of that organization's control. So the irony of all of this, and I sometimes joke that I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, in a band that's been together for 10 years and finally dropped a hit single. The irony is that this work has been going on, frustratingly, I'll be honest, around the pace of it, but it has been happening in the amateur sports sector of Canada for over 4 years based on the work we've been doing. So now it is critical that this happens within the professional sports world, and it needs to be on. I'm very honest. I sound really assertive right now, but I just want to be very direct. It needs to be done independently. People need to understand that policies do not prevent abuse in and of themselves, and compliance does not affect change. What I mean by that is I would challenge you as a parent, if you're listening, when was the last time you actually read the policies that you signed your children up for when you entered them into sport? I am not making you wrong or right, because I can tell you that if this had not happened to me, I also would have not looked at those policies. It is critical of parents that we're... Sorry. Yep, go ahead.
You're talking about parents, and I know we've got a lot of parents listening. We're talking with Allison Forsyth, the COO, ITP Sport, and Safe Sport Advocate. Now, Allison, you talk about parents, and you're talking about the policies, and I made a joke before you came on that I told my kids that they're my most prized possession, and I'm not just going to give them to anybody. But what do we look for? What do you look for as a parent with your child in, you know, a community organization playing hockey or soccer or baseball or basketball or something? Are there telltale signs that we should be looking for, you know, after we've kind of read policies?
Of course, and thank you for getting me off my rant there. I can go on and on. But so from a parental perspective, there's two critical things. One, and I'll just say frankly that, you know, as parents, I don't think any of us question why our children need to wear helmets. when they're on the ice. And so first and foremost, we need to start to question why we don't question if our children are emotionally and mentally safe when they're playing sports. So how we do that is we ask of the organization what policies and training they have in place. Yes, background checks matter, but they're not enough. You need to look at travel policies. Is the rule of two in place? How is your child being safeguarded by the organizational policies? Then the critical thing is to understand when it comes to sexual abuse, there is a very clear progression of grooming. And when I first heard about this, which was 17 years after the exact experience had happened to me, I was shocked because I had no idea. So it's very simple, and I'll be very quick. It is favoritism, which is a coach or a person of authority taking extra interest in your child for honestly no real apparent reason. It then leads into personal touch, personal conversation, and creating a personal bond. From there, it goes into isolation, which is when usually the abuse occurs. In acute circumstances, this could look like the coach driving your child to and from practices. It could look like the coach taking your child away on a trip. They find a way to make that child get removed from the environment, and that's usually when the abuse occurs. The final stage is complicity, and this is the one that could get me emotional. It is when they find a way to make the victim feel like it is their fault. The most common way to do this in an acute situation is that person of authority will buy that victim alcohol or drugs or some sort of circumstance where that victim will say to themselves, oh, well, I guess, you know, I was wrong, or I can't tell anyone because I did something bad. So you need to understand those stages: favoritism, personal bond, isolation, and complicity. And you need to watch out, and you need to watch out on behalf of all the children that are participating alongside your children.
You know, Allison, and I'm going to be paraphrasing this a little bit here, but one of the things I recall, even I don't mean for this to go back to Kyle Beach. I think that the topic is clearly beyond just, you know, the Kyle Beach situation of the last week or two. It's a topic that, you know, clearly should have been discussed and should be discussed much more, just on a grander scale in all sports, as you're laying out perfectly. But one of the comments that was made, and the person that made the comment has since kind of retracted and recognized the error of his ways and apologized and whatnot. But again, paraphrasing, it was initially like, well, how could Kyle Beach allow himself to be abused by somebody that's smaller than him? He's so much bigger and so much stronger and whatnot. And the way that you just articulated it, the psychological manipulation and control that a coach or a person of power, a person in a position of power, as you talk about, can have, especially over a young person. Not that it couldn't happen to a 20 or 30-year-old, but especially to a young child as well. That, to me, is what stands out, what you're talking about, just that psychological warfare and that power that somebody has over a young, influential person.
Yeah, and the example I like to use here is I often point to domestic abuse. I think that if you know, you haven't had the direct experience or know of someone that has, you could also ask yourself, you know, if a woman's being abused by her husband, why didn't she just walk out the door? There's many different opportunities to ask ourselves a critical question of, is there another place that I could see this happening? And that is, it is very coercive, it is very manipulative, and we as victims honestly are not in our right mind. We're being controlled by this person. I could honestly say I felt completely brainwashed by this man. And you could ask, I would believe any victim of Larry Nassar in the gymnastics case. This man was a doctor. He was doing horrific things to young girls, and yet they still went back to him because they believed it was medical treatment, and they believed that it was making them stronger athletes. So it is, I challenge everyone to step outside of what they think is possible, and not to, I don't expect anyone to understand what it feels like if you haven't had that experience, but I challenge everyone to have empathy for it being more complicated and less simple than they may think it is.
Wow. Okay. Allison, you've given us a lot to think about. In your own situation, you said that your abuser was, I guess, discovered or identified by a past victim. What situation did she have a child in, it was a she, did she have a child in a situation where the abuser was working again as a coach?
Yeah, so she is my hero. Her name is Genevieve Simard, and until this day, even though she was on the team when we were being abused, she was abused by this man for longer and from before. So she was abused by him for an extremely long period of time. She did not feel like she could come forward in the moment. So the first time that she admitted to being abused by him was the day she saw him again. She was a coach. She was a coach coaching young racers, and he quite literally skied up to her and just said hello like it was any other day in the world. She marched herself in her ski boots into the RCMP office in Mont-Tremblant, Quebec, and told her story. Within two hours, I got a call at work. Multiple victims were contacted and asked if we were willing to talk to the police. And within 24 hours, there were sirens. They had driven to his home, and they had arrested him based on the physical evidence that they found. So it was her and her alone who had the courage and the foresight to come forward and catch him, and the courage to walk into a police station in ski boots directly from a mountain and tell the police what had happened to her. So I have nothing but the most utmost respect for that woman.
Wow. Allison, listen, we could go on, you know, not just the entire hour, but for two or three or four. I do want to ask one last question, though. It applies back to, again, the conversation that you had with our group a couple of days ago, because the words have come up a couple of times here in the 20, 25 minutes we've had you on. Just in general, whether it be for a broadcaster or for average, you know, Joe Public, what is the, from your perspective, and I know I'm sure it's certainly different for everybody, but from your perspective, what is the proper terminology to use when we're talking about a person that has suffered mental, physical, sexual, emotional abuse, whether it's victim or survivor? Because those are terms that clearly as broadcasters we use a lot, but I'm sure we would be in everyday life as well if we were talking about a neighbor or a family member or whatever. What in your mind is the best term?
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate you saying in my mind, because I never, you know, I believe that victim or survivor is a self-identification. I also believe that it's contextual. So in my case, if I am, you know, if I'm in a speaking engagement and it's a positive, you know, happy environment, I would likely position myself as a survivor of sexual abuse. And when I'm really trying to affect change, I'm in more, you know, tactical conversations and I want to make an impact. I say, listen, I'm a victim of sexual abuse. So to me, those terms are interchangeable. And also I would caution, you know, the word alleged. I totally understand the legalities around cases being in court. And I challenge, you know, media and everyone to try to avoid that word and speak about this person in a way that's positive. What action words you can use around what this person is attempting to do, as opposed to labeling them as one thing or the other. So I appreciate you asking that question, and I know it's complicated, and I just appreciate everyone having that sensitivity to, you know, victim, survivor, alleged victim, because it means a lot. I was very traumatized when some words were used, and I was labeled in that way. So just know that re-victimization happens time and time again when we talk, when we have to go through trials, when we have to tell our stories. So just the amount of empathy and sympathy and respect that everyone can hold would be greatly appreciated.
Allison, listen, we appreciate your time today. And before I let you go, is if there's somebody listening right now, whether they're an athlete, whether they're a parent, whomever they may be, if they need help or need to speak to somebody, can you send them or in the right direction? Can you offer them where they could go if they're feeling that they need to speak to somebody right now?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's many helplines out there, but what I will say, honestly, and I've told the whole group this, that if you contact us at itpsport.ca, you're contacting me, and I love to hear from people. I take hours, and I'm happy to do so. A lot of people want to know. We can refer out to counseling services, of course. I am not a certified counselor. I am, however, someone who can support also if you want to understand how to navigate the quote-unquote system and seek justice and file a complaint. We can support you in that as well. This is what I do as a mentor and as a supporter of you know, victims everywhere, and I'm happy to do so.